Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It's 8:06 here on O'Connor and Company Monday morning. The 30th day of January, 30 days, almost 1 month gone already in this brand new year. Thanks for letting us be a part of your morning routine. Larry O'Connor with Julie Gunlock. Coming up in 30 minutes, Rob O'Donnell, former New York cop. He's going to give us his take on the horrific beating video of Tyre Nichols out of Memphis. Also coming up in 1 hour, it's the Chris Plant Show featuring today, hosted by Chris Plant. Weird. Chris Plant hosting. I shouldn't talk. We all take vacations.
Not me. I'm a little sensitive. Everybody's been on vacation.
You went to Portugal last year. All right. That's all coming up. Right now, though, we're joined by Representative Michael Waltz, Colonel in the National Guard, former Green Beret. I want to be perfectly clear here. I erroneously referred him as the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He is the chairman of the new Subcommittee on Readiness of the House Armed Services Committee, and he joins us now. Thank you for being here, Congressman Waltz. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, good to be with you. Thanks.
Well, I know that readiness is a key issue for you, and I'd love for you to sort of talk about where we stand right now in terms of readiness and what you hope to achieve as the chairman of that subcommittee.
Well, you know, a couple of key priorities, as you know, right now, our readiness is struggling. We've had the worst recruiting year since Vietnam. So that will be a top priority. We will absolutely focus on getting our military back to a warrior mindset. It's not about race, religion, socioeconomic background, or any of that other stuff. It's about standards and the standards that you need to win the nation's wars. I'm really thrilled to be working with the Heritage Foundation on a special commission focused on how we can do just that. So it's the recruiting and retention. It's the warrior mindset and getting us focused on winning our wars. And then it's also, particularly in the Pacific as it pertains to China, it's what we call contested logistics. We've never had to resupply our military in combat with the entire supply chain under threat. And that's everything from the Chinese being able to shut off our pharmaceuticals, our lithium for any batteries that we have, plus their missile threat for our shipping. And then finally, the industrial base. We've seen, I think, with Ukraine, that our industry, our manufacturing lines are not prepared to surge. Some of this equipment is so sophisticated that we just can't flip a switch and mass produce it. And we really need to look at policies to address that.
Well, just
a few things.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you didn't even mention the fact that, you know, the pullout of Afghanistan had to be horrible, not just for morale of active duty, but also, that's right. Going to be a problem with recruitment. But you mentioned China
And we will have an investigation. I neglected to say we will be driving towards accountability for those veterans and for those Gold Star families on the Afghanistan withdrawal.
We are eagerly anticipating that. But you mentioned China. I know, Julie, you were looking at a story this morning about China.
Yeah, you know, I was watching Fox News Sunday, and you had Representative Michael McCaul, chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee, saying that he really does think that we are looking at a conflict with China. He said that China is going to try to take Taiwan. You have military men, General Mike Minahan, saying that his gut tells him that we will be fighting China in 2025. This is scary stuff. I mean, when what you just said about readiness, that we can't recruit the men we need, men and women we need to fight.
Well, you're absolutely right. I'm thrilled to join Representative Mike McCaul on the Foreign Affairs Committee in addition to Armed Services. And I've also joined the Intel Committee. So we're going to get at this from all angles. But look, we need a wake-up call as a country. And don't take it from me or McCaul or anyone else. Listen to Chairman Xi of the Chinese Communist Party. He is telling his country to prepare for war. He is positioning his country to defeat the United States. He is talking openly about being the global superpower, not a global superpower, the global superpower, and replacing the American dream with the Chinese dream. And the thing that's so frustrating is, yes, they have the most massive military buildup in modern history, tripling the size of their nuclear fleet, amongst other things. But they plan on doing it economically. They plan on the United States imploding economically. And meanwhile, we've got the NBA and Hollywood and Wall Street and everyone else throwing billions into the Chinese market. So the other thing that we're going to be getting at is cutting off capital, because historians are going to look back and say, you sold your enemy the rope to hang yourself.
Well, it's certainly you're on armed services, you know, and foreign affairs, and you're going to get at this from all sides. But I certainly also hope that you are looking at the education system in this country and DEI, which is creeping into the military as well. These things also weaken America and weaken America, especially against an enemy like China, which doesn't have any time for this DEI stuff.
Yeah, look, our military is and must be a meritocracy. It is about, I keep saying it, it's about standards. We had language in last year's defense bill to direct the Army to go back to a gender-neutral physical standard and make it according to the job. It's obviously a different standard to be an infantryman or woman than it is to be a cyber warrior and type on a keyboard, right? So it is the enemy's bullets, as you just said, could care less about what color one of our bomber pilots are or who's in that foxhole. Yeah. It's about the red, white, and blue. That's it.
Congressman Walz, we've got 31 U.S. Abrams tanks, M1 tanks, heading over to Ukraine. That's no easy feat, by the way. Logistically, it's a nightmare. I know, as an Army guy, you understand logistics. But also the ongoing training and service. Do you know what kind of commitment U.S. troops will have to make in country, in Ukraine, to actually support these M1 tanks? And would that constitute boots on the ground, in your opinion?
I don't see U.S. boots on the ground. I could foresee a situation where the Defense Department puts contractors in, because I was a tanker before I was a Green Beret. They're phenomenal machines. If trained properly, if used with the right tactics, they can be incredibly effective on the battlefield, but those are two big ifs. And the biggest if is if they can be maintained with spare parts and the right types of fuel and other types of services. And that is incredibly it's incredibly difficult to do. So, you know, all of those things have to come together for these to make a difference on the battlefield. And I think that's a big question mark. And then finally, I just have to say, you know, I find it appalling that the Germans demanded that we provide these tanks before they do, given everything that the United States has provided already, and given that the Germans have fallen way short of their pledges. The Europeans have got to step up, and Biden needs to be poking them in the chest a hell of a lot harder instead of sipping tea and eating crumpets or whatever they're doing over in their European club, because this is in all of our interest, but it is absolutely in Europe's backyard, and they've got to step up and do more.
Michael Walz, he's no crumpet eater there. He is now the chairman of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Readiness, and I appreciate you joining us, Congressman. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
No, I couldn't tell you. What is a crumpet?
I like that.
Is it like a scone? Is it like a...
Or whatever else they're doing
exactly
over there.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's 8:15.
News Talk 105.9
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Well, the teams are set for the Super Bowl, and boy, you talk about insufferable, arrogant, obnoxious teams. The Eagles are pretty bad.
Yeah.
Kind of the worst, actually.
Yes.
Chiefs aren't much better. I mean, they do have the Midwest charm going for them, I suppose, but they act like they invented football. It's ridiculous. And I'm sorry, as a Redskins fan, that's right, I said Redskins.
Oh, no.
I'm sitting there watching the Chiefs there. They score, and I wasn't watching, but I saw replays because, you know, I'm not watching through the Exodus 90 fasting. But I did, for work, I had to research and watch things. And I see all these fans standing up, you know, some of them wearing Indian headdresses, doing the tomahawk chop, you know, 70,000 of them there in Kansas City rooting on their Chiefs, and everybody's supposed to be okay with
that.
Yeah,
everyone's good. Well.
And Redskins, like, oh, come on.
Well, I mean, I.
What? What? Chiefs, say it.
There's. You can imagine the DEI officer getting less upset by the word Chiefs.
Oh, really?
Than
oh, okay.
Redskin.
I want you to refer to your Native American coworker as Chief. Okay. Go ahead. Fine. Go ahead. Fine. Try that one, Julie. I will not be speaking on your behalf at the HR tribunal.
This will be added to the blooper roll because that
right.
Was really stupid of me.
If
but,
you even oh, yeah? get a hearing at HR for someone. You kidding?
Just try it.
Just go ahead. Call
go ahead.
Call your Native
Let's
American
see how
friend
that goes
Chief,
over.
And just walk around doing the tomahawk chop. Wow, this is a great paper you turned in.
Okay, settle down.
I'm just saying, it's a little angering. Anyway, so there you go. You got your Eagles. God, they're the. Hey, can I just point out one of the Eagles had a great season, fantastic season.
Is there
hardly any losses? You know who one of those losses were? The Washington Commanders.
Of course.
On Monday Night Football. We kicked their butts up in Philly, I'll have you know. Something nice.
Nice.
They beat the 49ers, and of course they had the refs help. But the,
You're terrible.
They will meet, the Eagles and the Chiefs will meet at Super Bowl LVII.
So who are you rooting for?
Which is 57. I don't know. I guess I'm, you know, I'll ask Chris. So our buddy Chris DeGaulle, my best friend Chris DeGaulle.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell Kurt Schlichter I said that. But Chris is he was the best man at my wedding. He's a great guy, wonderful, love Chris DeGaulle. He's the morning radio guy in Philadelphia. He also does mid-mornings.
Sure.
On our sister station in Kansas City, KCMO. And he's from Kansas City. He lives
there. Oh.
So he's basically,
wow,
he's on the air in both markets.
Wow.
So I'm going to have to defer to Chris DeGaulle on that.
Oh,
I think,
idea.
But he's a Chiefs fan.
Well, I'm a Midwesterner.
He grew up in Missouri. Yeah, I guess
I'm a Midwesterner, so I'm going to go with.
I know,
Kansas
but I'm an
Chiefs.
NFC guy.
I haven't asked my husband who he's going to go for, so I guess I'll.
I'm an NFC guy, and there's something to be said about the NFC East here, even if it's the freaking Eagles. If they
win, you can't
win,
root for the Eagles.
I can't root
you
for
can't,
the Eagles. But it is, you know, I could if it were the Cowboys, forget it. There's no way. But there's something about, you know, if the Eagles win, it sort of validates our conference and the Washington football team.
Not the Eagles, though.
You're right. So here's the thing. That's how a rivalry is supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's like, for instance, if Ohio State beats Michigan, I don't care. I will never root for them. I don't care. You know that.
I know.
Like, you're just keeping your mouth shut on that one. But it's like, oh, you got to root for the Big Ten team. Not Ohio State, I don't.
I know.
No, it's not going to happen.
That's right.
So, and that's how it's supposed to be. So explain to me what happened in New York yesterday.
Oh, this is serious.
The New York Giants are a huge rival of the Philadelphia Eagles. Probably much worse. I mean, the Redskins' the Commanders' big rival are the Cowboys, right?
Right.
The Eagles' big rival would be the Giants because New York, Philly, they hate each other in everything, in baseball, in hockey, whatever it is. So they lit the Empire State Building green and white and said, "Fly, Eagles, fly," in support. They actually tweeted out, the Empire State Building has a Twitter account because opposable thumbs. And they said, "Fly, Eagles, fly."
Hold on.
That is an abomination.
Right. And I really.
The way New Yorkers react, they're going to burn that building down.
I'm not kidding. There's going to be riots.
There will be.
We should be on alert. But let me tell you, I think anyone can rent that space and turn it whatever color they want.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's. Yeah, I think
so. Can the Trump campaign rent it and then light it up orange?
Yes.
The orange man is back.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
So everybody cool your jets about the New York Empire State Building.
So you think the Eagles.
Dave Portnoy, I
do not think that.
Went off
Dave Portnoy is not a big fan of the Eagles. I think he lost a lot of money.
But I think that is just for sale.
Dave Portnoy said, I don't think that's what happened here. I think that this is somebody. It's like, oh, we're just excited for our, you know, our sister city. It says, "Fly, Eagles, fly. We're going green and white in honor of the Eagles NFC Championship." Later in the day, they did the same thing. They did orange and gold for the racist Chiefs. Okay. But you're right, Dave Portnoy. How lame is the Empire State Building lighting up a New York building in the colors of an NFC East rival? What an absolute piece of bleep building. I'd be embarrassed to have it in my city. They should knock it down.
The iconic Empire State.
Knock it down.
Yeah, let's lock it down. Let's knock it down.
It's a bit of an Al-Qaeda vibe there.
Exactly.
I don't think that's the way to go, Dave.
He's a little Antifa at that moment.
Anyway, good luck to both teams. We really would love to. No, who am I kidding? Forget it. 822. Who doesn't want to be an ice princess? Wait, I don't want to be an ice princess.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Want to be an
little
ice
girls
princess.
All want to grow up to be an ice little princess, girls, though. That's yeah. why Ilsa. Boy, I was just down in the Disney parks this weekend. Lots of Ilsas running around there.
Yes,
it's a big deal, and it was a big deal to this person, this beautiful and brave Finnish woman who always wanted to be a ice princess, and she had her moment in the sun. She said, oh wait, this is a guy. Hold on, hold everything.
This is a man.
This is a very visual story here, so I'm going to do my best to describe it. It was the European Figure Skating Championships, and they said they wanted to feature people of all various levels of skating acumen, right? And so they included this transgender farmer person. He's in his late 59 years old, said that he always wanted to be a...
an ice princess.
An ice princess, so... well, it didn't.
There were some clues that this might not go well.
Let's hear the Finnish play-by-play, shall we?
Sain ajatuksen lähteä toteuttamaan lapsuuden haaveita ja alkaa luistella naismoodissa, vaikka syntyperäisin olenkin mies. Ja sieltä on niin kuin 9 vuotta aikaa, eli siihen 9 vuoteen sisältyy.
Can you translate that? I think in short it's like,
the translation is turn off the cameras, please, instantly. Go to commercial.
Because he didn't skate very well, fell down a couple of times, couldn't get back up. I feel sorry. So there's this young woman, she's probably about 20 years old, who is a proficient figure skater.
And a woman.
And an actual woman, carrying the Finnish flag, who skated over and...
Took pity. He had fallen and he could not get up. Seriously. And I'm not trying to be one of those hats. He did not hit the button. Anyway, so he did hit the button, and this lovely Finnish ice skater, female ice skater, went over and sort of helped him.
Minna Maria Antikainen is the name of the trans identified biological male. By the way, he/she pronouns are throughout this thing, because apparently non-gender specific trans woman, I think, is the official.
It all gets very complicated. I need a pie chart. But yeah. I will say that he is being called, you know, in the news, the transgender male figure skater. No, he can't skate.
That's the biggest lie in all of this.
Yes.
He's
not a figure skater.
I could figure skate better than this. And yeah. I've just seen that movie with Maura Kelly a few times, honestly. And that's all it takes. So. And I didn't even watch for the skating. It was Maura Kelly.
But we're all supposed to pretend, Larry. Supposed to pretend this was this brave moment. And
well, he wanted to be an ice princess. And he couldn't quite let it go.
Here we are.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Rob O'Donnell about the beating death of Tyre Nichols and whether there was any justification from the cops. If there is one, Rob will let us know. I don't think there is one. It's 8:30.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
On News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It's 8:36 on O'Connor and Company this Monday morning in the nation's capital. It's a big day around here because coming up in 30 minutes, Chris Plant will be hosting The Chris Plant Show. We're all very excited to get Chris back in. We've missed him. And you know what? I'm also sick of all the people that I run into saying, where the hell's Chris?
That happened to me on Saturday.
Oh, I'm sure at the event.
He's fine.
Great to see you. Where's Chris? He's back. He'll be here. Don't worry. Joining us right now, our friend Rob O'Donnell. Of course, he is a former police officer in the New York Police Department. And since retiring as a cop, he has become an advocate for law enforcement everywhere and an analyst whenever there is an officer involved incident, as we've seen down in Memphis, Tennessee, with the beating death of Tyre Nichols. So Rob joins us now. Good morning, Rob. Great to have you. I'm sorry about the circumstances under which we have our conversation today, but thanks for being here.
I appreciate it, Larry and Julie.
So based on everything you know and everything that you saw in this video, is there anything here that sort of would mitigate what appears to be just a complete and total abuse of power and just a horrific beating of a man at the hands of law enforcement. I mean, is there any proper police procedures in this that you can see?
No, this isn't a training issue. You cannot train someone to be inhumane. No police department in this country trains someone to field goal kick someone in the face when they're lying prone on the ground. No department in this country trains someone to strike a handcuffed and secured subject. This is a group of thugs who should have never been cops, who were given this. And we're seeing today that what this exodus of good law enforcement, because of this atmosphere that's been created over the years, you know, they're lowering standards and bringing in officers that normally wouldn't pass to be vetted and pass to wear that badge. And this is what we're seeing here. And we see that you know, each of these officers have less than 5 years. Some of them were hired 2 years ago when the Memphis police lowered their standards. The International Association of Chiefs of Police said today that 50% of police agencies across the nation have lowered their standards because of this recruitment and retention problem. We've lost the best, the brightest, and the best trained, and they're taking people now that normally wouldn't pass the normal criteria for being a law enforcement officer. And I just have to stress, what we saw here is horrendous. You know, that was my take from the start. I can just simply not justify. Yes, these officers are given their due process. The system worked as it should. It worked swift and decisively. So why people are upset? I mean, I'd be upset at the incident, but not the outcome, because the outcome worked as just as it's supposed to work, the criminal justice system. This is not indicative of law enforcement. You have 800,000 police officers with over 30 million face-to-face contacts with the public. And this is like 0.1% of incidents nationwide.
Rob, what concerns me is that they weren't just hired. They were part of some elite unit, some street crimes unit to tackle this stuff, which that says to me, oh, okay, they were hired and then they are specially trained. Why did this police department set up this elite unit, put these new and untested officers, and not very well trained officers in this program? I don't really understand how this even came about. Is this part of this DEI model, not only hire cops that look a certain way, but then put them in elite units?
Well, because as I stated, they're losing the best in their departments because they just are not going to work under these circumstances anymore. And they're forced to put people that normally wouldn't get into these units, just like they're forced to hire them. But, you know, units like this are very successful around the country. In New York, we had the street crime. They have the gang suppression team in San Diego and L.A. But it takes aggressive policing to be proactive policing. But aggressive is not physically aggressive. Aggressive is you're addressing the crime aggressively, not beating the suspects aggressively. Yeah. And it's just to see what happened here.
Yeah,
it's just, like I said, horrendous. It angers all law enforcement officers just as much, all good law enforcement officers just as much as it angers the public.
And I mean, is there oversight? I don't understand, but I acknowledge the fact that great experienced cops have left. We've lamented this, Rob, on this radio station for 5, 6, 7 years now, that the dads are no longer encouraging their own sons to be cops anymore. And that's because we've had legacies of generations of cops, that's especially in the Northeast Corridor, and that's not happening anymore. So I understand they're desperate to bring people into the police force, so standards have been lowered. But is there no oversight? Is there no leadership? And this goes right back to the police chief, doesn't it? I mean, I don't care what excuses they've got. These guys were allowed to.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen
to operate, and they seem pretty. Here's the thing: I doubt this is the first time they've done this, because they seem pretty okay with everything they were doing.
Yeah, just the sheer nature of aggressiveness of this stop, you know, leads me to believe, you know, what else is there? You know, I'd really like to see down the road, you know, what more there is here, because it was just extraordinary aggressive from the start. For reckless driving, even if he was swerving his car around towards them, that'll all come out. But it's, regardless of what he was pulled over for, regardless of what he did, you know, there's no excuse for the abuse that he sustained during that talk. But with the oversight and supervision that you're talking about, that's the part of the success of these aggressive units that they've had across the nation. Proactive policing units. Supervision has to be there. It has to be on the ground with them. It has to be there at all times, directing them, not sitting in an office studying for the next lieutenant's test or captain's test. They need to be on the ground, directly supervised, to make sure they're following the proper procedures, to make sure they're supervised properly, and to put a stop to something like this immediately if it does start to happen.
What do you make, Rob, real fast, we're almost done here, Van Jones, of course, and many other activists who always jump on the race issue, they're quick to point out that even though all these cops are black and the victim is black, this is still racism. This is systemic racism and white supremacy because, well, cops can be racist no matter what color their skin. I mean, it's almost a punchline. It sounds like a Babylon Bee headline, but this is really what's being passed off as legitimate analysis of this situation. Do you see racial animus anywhere here?
No, there's no way that these five black police officers gathered at roll call that morning and said, hey, we're going to go out and find a black guy and beat him to death. You know, here's all five black police officers. It's a black police chief. It's a majority black city council. The police department in Memphis is majority black. Their narrative of systemic white racism in policing was destroyed by this incident, and they have nothing left but to double down on it.
Rob O'Donnell. Thank you, sir. Always good to have you for your perspective on these things.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
You bet.
Julie. Larry.
It is. By the way, Rob, congratulations. I understand Rob's going to be a radio host up there in Pennsylvania. He's got a gig. Is that official? Can I say that?
That's official. I can't. I was supposed to start today, but due to corporate saying I don't exist because my driver's license check didn't come back.
Oh, don't get me started on radio corporations.
Tomorrow, Wednesday, I'll be starting in the afternoon drive up here in Northeast Pennsylvania, but I can't announce the station or where.
Well, and nor will we because it's not our company, and we're never going to have you on the air again. Kidding. Thanks, Rob. Good luck to you. It's good luck. Never talk.
Thank you.
Lose our number. It's 8:40. I'm kidding. It's 8:45. WMAL traffic and weather every 10 minutes first. Well, he's tanned. He's rested. He's ready. And now he's ready to get back into the fight. He, of course, is Hung Cao, former candidate for Congress in Loudoun County. He's floating the idea now that he might be ready to challenge Tim Kaine for the Senate bid.
Love to see it.
Listen, oof. Not only did he get a lot more votes than, I mean, listen, I thought he was going to win that race, but districted.
Before we started, I said, wait, I'm still not over him losing. I can't believe
it. I know.
Yeah.
He was probably one of the best candidates of this last crop for the midterms that did not end up winning. And you could fault a lot of different people, including strategies coming out of the RNC, I think. It's part of the reasons why Ronna McDaniel was sort of under the gun there. That said, he did have one key factor of the entire crop of new candidates running for Congress this last time around. He raised more money than any of them. And that's an indication that you could run for Senate as well and run statewide. A source close to the former candidate told our friends over at Breitbart that he's currently focused on running a new federal super PAC called Unleash America PAC. He's the honorary chairman, but he's out there being the tip of the spear for them. And he's now floating the idea and very seriously considering running for Congress for Senate against Tim Kaine.
Amen. Amen. I really hope he does. That was a real heartbreak when he did not win that race. And but we all said at the time, we're like, oh, gosh, he's got a serious future in politics.
Well, let's not forget, this is one of our favorite ads that he put out there. This is a retired captain of the United States Navy. He did the demolition duty. He got into scuba gear, went underwater, and defused bombs.
He's a superhero.
And and he did that for special operations guys. He's a Vietnamese immigrant.
Great family man.
Fantastic wife, great kids. And here's one of his ads.
I was 4 years old. We escaped communism. One last family's out of Vietnam. My father was on a list to be executed. No one loves America like I do. I went to the Naval Academy, served in combat in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia. alongside Special Forces and SEAL teams for 25 years. I'm Hung Cao, running for Congress. I approve this message. Defending America is the greatest honor of my life. But now, I have five close friends who are being kicked out of the Navy because of Biden's vaccine mandate. These are Special Forces and SEAL Team 6 operators, the best and the toughest. We do the work that most won't and can't do. These are the people who make it safe for you to sleep at night. Joe Biden's woke government is kicking them out, discarding them like trash. This is not how America treats our heroes. I will not stand for it. I'm going to Congress to...
I know a lot of our listeners live out there, but I'm still angry at all of you for not electing this man in Congress.
Exactly.
But if that means he has a chance to go after Tim Kaine in the Senate, then okay, maybe, you know, God makes lemonade out of lemons.
That's right. That's right.
And I'd love for, you know, Tim Kaine's rejoinder to this. Oh, yeah, well, I have a son who's Antifa. He's tough. He's like, here's Hung Cao actually saying, these are my friends, you know, Navy SEALs.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, Tim Kaine's really good friends with Hillary. There's that.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will fight for every single person here. That's what I've done in military. I've served every single person that worked with me. Whether they believed in my politics or not, my job was to take care of them, and I will do that in the 10th District. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so proud to come here in this amazing country. I mean, where else can a Vietnamese refugee come here, grow up in West Africa, and come back here, go to one of the top high schools in the country, Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, go to United States Naval Academy, get a master's degree in physics at Naval Postgraduate School, go to Harvard, MIT. Where? Where else but America?
Yeah, and he went out, listen, he's always had such a great uplifting, positive message. And I want the debate where he can, you know, criticize the policies at Thomas Jefferson High School that today would keep Hung Cao from enrolling.
That's right.
Hung Cao wouldn't That's be able right. to go to Thomas Jefferson High School right now merely because he's Asian.
Yep.
And I would love for Tim Kaine to defend that policy.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, because we need more room for white liberals like me and my kids to be able to go there instead of you, Hung Cao, and
Precisely.
Your children. That's
Precisely.
What the debate would be. All right, so that's interesting.
That is a really good news. I really hope that I hope he's listening right now.
I'm not too we'll be happy again. We're not taking sides. As soon as we hear new people who are maybe running for Senate in Virginia, we'll be excited about them too. Anybody's better than Tim Kaine.
It is undeniable that Hung Cao was such a compelling, exciting candidate.
Yep. So there you go. We'll see what happens. Well, all is right with the world, Julie Gunlock. Look who's here. It's Chris Plant. He's
so
back.
Excited.
Chris, welcome back.
All right, thank you. You're enjoying my penguin slippers?
I was going to say, is that a penguin slippers? In your pocket? Or
and,
you
my,
just,
and my hat. And my hat. It's a
Antarctica.
Emperor, yeah. Antarctica.
So is that it? You've now hit all seven continents? Was that what this was
seven
all about?
Continents, yeah.
There you go. Good for you.
That was my seventh. They call it the seventh continent.
You know? Right, they do.
Because it's usually the last one people get to.
Really? See, and, I always forget Australia.
You know, it's kind of far away, too.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more, you know, it's the sun
People.
Is out, and it's
right.
Nice. Yeah, but Antarctica, we got back on Friday after a 33-hour travel sojourn from Ushuaia in Tierra del Fuego, as everyone knows. Any school child can tell you. And on the Drake Passage and all kinds of mayhem and violence. A lot of fun. More on that.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.